Hello, everyone. Welcome to Shakya Presents Movie Night. My name is Rudy Obias. I'm your host. Joining me for this episode, she is a writer for film.com, Elizabeth Rapp. Thank you so much for joining me on this episode.
Oh, thank you for having me.
No problem. So the movie that we're going to be talking about in this episode is the new movie from filmmaker Steve McQueen. He's a British filmmaker, and this is actually his second film, Shame. Hunger was his first film that came out 3 years ago in 2008. This, much like Hunger, stars Michael Fassbender. I really like this this collaboration between Michael Fassbender and Steve McQueen. It just works so well seeing these two people work together. A quick synopsis of Shame. This is from IMDb.com. In New York City, Brandon's careful, cultivated private life, which allows him to indulge his sexual addiction, is disrupted when his sister Sissy arrives unannounced for indefinite stay. So, Elizabeth Rapp, what are your thoughts on Shame? And I guess as a follow-up to Hunger, how does this movie fit in Steve McQueen's career after his first film, Hunger?
He's obviously into, I don't want to say, and small scale is not the right, intimate stories. I mean, I think that that's, there's almost, comparing him to Cronenberg is probably really glib, but he has like a real focus on the physical and on somebody's body. And I find that really fascinating because it's not as like horrific as what Cronenberg does. It's a really gentle, sensual way he films people and stories, which is a really weird thing for to say with Shame because it's it's not quite sensual.
Oh, no, not at all. There's a lot of nudity and there's a lot of sex in this movie. This movie infamously got an NC-17 rating from the MPAA, but at the same time, it's not really titillating or
no.
Arousing the type of sex and nudity that they show in this movie.
No, I would argue that because he's just sort of frank. He's frank about everything. It was the same with Hunger. There was a lot of, for all the hype about, oh my God, Fassbender's naked. He was naked in Hunger too, but it's just so very clinically matter of factly presented.
Yeah.
And yet very, not ever for shock value. I mean, it's just there. Like he's just very, I would say McQueen's a very naturalistic filmmaker. He presents things very gently in a way. Like it's weird to say it, but it's like, you have the story of a man starving himself to death, and it's so soft and poetic and not as horrific as you would think it is. I mean, it's horrific, but not the way he does it is like just so gentle in a way. It's so slow and, and Shame is very much the same way. I mean, there's a lot of sort of frenetic scenes in it, and yet it's still just so languid of a version. Like it's not at all that sort of, sweaty, scrambling around for your next fix. And there's like one sequence like that, but for the most part, it's just this kind of languid story about a sex addict in a way. And it seems like that's what's going to be his focus. It's just very intimate, very, very human stories, but also very, stories that are a bit off. I mean, if he isn't 12 Years a Slave, that's his next one.
Yeah.
And I can totally see how that's going to kind of fit into it because you're, again, talking about somebody's body being exploited and somebody, the physical being a big part of that. And I'm really curious to see how he's going to do that against these two movies.
Well, it's interesting that you bring up how Steve McQueen just gives us these intimate moments. He's giving us these intimate moments with a character who has the inability to be intimate with another human being, which is why he craves sex so much that he needs his fix as if it were a drug. But at the same time, he can't become intimate with someone, even someone he's interested in. There's this sequence in this movie where he asks this girl in his office out on a date, and it feels like he generally is attracted to this woman, and they go on a date, and it's not the most it's kind of an awkward date, but it slowly builds steam, and there's definitely a lot of charm behind it towards the end. There's a moment when they have when they want to get intimate with each other, when they want to have sex. Michael Fassbender's Brandon can't do it. That scene is very interesting to me because what the shot that comes before that scene is Michael Fassbender's character Brandon doing a line of cocaine. So when I was – my only thing with this movie was he unable to have sex with this woman because he couldn't become intimate with her, like on an emotional and mental level? Or was it the cocaine in his system why he couldn't have sex?
I immediately thought the former, because throughout the whole movie, it's like he can have sex. It's very much that he doesn't know the person, and he can't. There was almost a moment of guilt. Like, you know, I know this woman. She has a name. She has a history. I can't do it. Like, you know, she knows me. I know her. He really preferred anonymous hookups, people he could just sort of pick up and leave again. You never see him go to the same girl twice. A lot of times they were hookers. They were, you know, girls on porn sites. And I really think that it was the emotional connection that he just could not do. Like, he really did like her. And I think the fact that she threw that out there about that, well, to her, there was no point in doing things, you know, getting to know somebody or whatever, if you weren't going to have a relationship. And I think he sort of inched towards it and then was like, no, I can't. Like, you know, there's no way that, you know, this is going to be a one-time deal with her and that's what I need. And I can't ever do this again. Like, there was just no way he could do it. Yeah. The cocaine thing was so weird, though, because yeah. You never see him do it again.
And that's why I automatically thought why he couldn't have sex with her is because of the cocaine, because they never show that ever again in the whole movie. But thinking about it now, after that scene that Brandon has with Marianne, he does have sex with some random woman.
Yeah, he does. I think she's like a hooker or something. It was very, and you don't know her name, and he's all like, you know, you want a drink? She's like, nope. She just picks up random where it goes.
Yeah.
You know, and and he's just totally like, he's having a blast. Like, that's what does it for him. The only way he can really get off and as a way, as it were. But
the
date, I actually really like the date sequence because it reminded me of the long sequence in Hunger, because you brought that up, and it was so real. Like, we've all been on the date like that, where it's so like you're trying to start this conversation this person, and then the waiter just keeps coming back. Like, I thought that was really. For a movie that is probably going to shock a lot of people, there's so many like really warm, relatable moments like that in it that you're just, you really kind of reach out to this guy and you know exactly, you know, who he is and the night he's having in a way. It's like, he was very real.
What are your thoughts on Carey Mulligan in this movie playing his sister, Sissy? I found her to be... I loved her in this movie, and much like Michael Fassbender, she also gets there's full frontal nudity with her as well, but it's never sexual. It's just happens because she's taking a shower and we all take a shower naked, so that's how Steve McQueen shows this thing. What are your thoughts on Carey Mulligan in this film, and I guess overall, what are your thoughts on the relationship between Brandon and Sissy?
Well, you know, I thought it was fascinating that, you know, McQueen doesn't really do twists, but I thought it was kind of interesting that he leads you on as to who this is. I mean, it takes a long time before you figure out they're brother and sister. Because when you first hear her voicemails, you kind of assume it's like an ex-lover or an ex-girlfriend calling him obsessively. And then, I mean, because I went into this cold, like I hadn't read the synopsis or anything. And then when she shows up in the apartment, well, you gave me a key and everything, you know, there's just enough sort of tension between them that it's like, are these two people exes? I mean, what's the, and then, you know, she bounces in, you kind of realize, you know, you figure out it's a sister or something. There was something in the dialogue and I was like, oh, okay, that is what they are, because it was very, they're so, you know, stiff and they're, you know, she's so, what do you want to say? Invasive of his life that you really weren't sure what she was at first. And I really liked her. I mean, cause I thought it was such a brilliant contrast between incredible fastidiousness and his repression and just how tightly wound he was. And you have this very sloppy, hysteric, you know, drinks out of the carton, you know, sister of his that, you know, and yet you totally see the same horrible damaged traits in both of them. I just thought it was a great compare contrast of performances. I think if you had any, you know, if you swapped them out, like with all our actors and stuff, it wouldn't have worked like nearly as well. I just thought they complemented each other really, really well. Like, they totally were in tune with each other. You know, I'm a big fan of Mulligan's. I think she's just an actress that's continuously impressed me. And I thought she was really good in this. And
what I found so interesting with their relationship as brother and sister, there's kind of like this underlying, like pent up sexual desire for each other, which was kind of a little off putting.
Incestuous. You know, I don't have a brother, but I would never have stood there in the shower without a towel on. Yeah. Which I thought was really odd. And again, it threw you so bad to find out in a way they were siblings, because there was like a sexual tension between them, her walking around in the kind of see-through t-shirt and, you know, walking in on him on the, you know, masturbating in the shower and then, or in the bathroom. And then like he jumps on her and the towel's on. I was like, who does that?
Well, and also she like climbs into bed with him, you know.
Yeah, that too. And he was kind of like, you know, he's like, "No, get out!" It's like, yeah, that's not cool. Like, I don't know that's cool.
And so just getting the impression that like perhaps Brandon and also Sissy have this really kind of fucked up view of sex, you know,
yeah.
Which definitely lends to this type of movie. Because I don't want to say it's a fucked up view of sex, but it's just putting sex in a way that's just not titillating at all.
Yeah. Well, see, there was. I mean, you got the distinct impression he could not. I mean, because probably there are lots of brothers and sisters who could sleep in the same bed together, but I got the distinct impression that Brandon would not be able to sleep in a room with Sissy without having issues, you know?
Yeah.
And,
well, I don't know any brothers and sisters that are like that.
Yeah. And yeah, it was interesting. She was so much more, open about. Because, yeah, they did. They both had such a you know, twisted view of sex. I mean, she was obviously chasing, you know, emotional relationships more than he was, and just kind of throwing herself into a lot of beds, trying to get whatever it was, just like he was. And it was very interesting. And how whatever abuse, because it's pretty clear they were abused, whatever they suffered manifests itself in the same ways in both of them, you know. It's just that one's more loud about her emotions and, you know, definitely looking for love, where he's, you know, looking more for a release. He's so pent up that, you know.
Well, even throughout like probably the last third of this movie, where he's just kind of going on this sexual rampage where he doesn't even care where he's getting off at or with who, or even if he's going to get into a fight with someone, he just doesn't care. Those moments in the movie just. We're just so powerful to watch. Just this man disintegrating right before my eyes. Especially like if you look at it in terms of hunger, you're seeing that in the last third of the movie. Only that's physical. In shame, it's a disintegration of perhaps his soul or even just his sexuality.
Yeah, it was, and it was such a great contrast to like this guy. I mean, because he is very tightly wound and very. And, you know, not nervous, but reserved. And you see him on the date and he's, apparently scared shitless in a way. And then it's such a contrast from the restaurant to what he's like in that bar, where he's just like, you know, laying it out there as to what he's going to do to this, what he wants to this woman, you know, to not only to her, but to the boyfriend. And it's, I mean, it's not only is, you have to wonder, which is the real side of him. But yeah, just the fact that he's like losing all his inhibitions, if he ever has any, when he sort of turns on into this addict mode, you know, because it was two different guys. I mean, there's this guy that's like, oh, I think I'll have the lamb. You know, like he's so nervous. And then this guy going, I'm just going to shove my hand under your skirt. I was really struck by those two scenes next to each other. Because as you're watching it, you're like, I don't know if I think this performance. I don't know, you know, it's nothing compared to what he did in Hunger. And then it's when you contrast moments like that, you're like, he deserves all the good acclaim that he's getting.
In Hunger, it was more of a physical transformation, you know, just going from life to death. And in Shame, it's more of a psychological disintegration or transition. I mentioned earlier in the episode that this movie's was pretty controversial in the fact that it's an NC-17 movie. I know there are a lot of film bloggers and film critics out there, or film pundits out there, that think the NC-17 is a little too harsh, that this movie should actually be a rated R movie. What are your thoughts on that? Do you feel that the NC-17 was justified, or do you think that this movie could get away with a solid rated R?
You know, I think it could have gotten away with an R. I mean, it's really, I got in an argument with somebody on Twitter not too long ago about the way nudity and sex has changed in movies. Because when you watch stuff from the 70s and 80s, it's pretty, there's a lot of stuff from 80s that's pretty hardcore. American Gigolo has probably the same amount of nudity. The sex is filmed really differently and odd in that movie, but it's like, you know, Richard Gere climbs out of bed and he just walks across the screen naked. I mean, and it's really matter of fact and no big deal. And there's a lot of movies from the 70s and 80s that did that. And we that were just R. And we got really far away from that. And I think, I mean, it's like Midnight Cowboy. And it was an X.
Yeah, that was a rated X.
Because I would have to say it's probably comparable to that. So maybe in a way it does deserve the rating if you're going to match it to something from the past, but I never thought Midnight Cowboy was particularly graphic either.
Well, this movie starts off pretty graphically. I mean, not in a sex scene, I guess in male nudity.
Yeah. But it's so, I mean, it's, but there you go again, because it's like, well, Eastern Promises pretty much did the same thing.
But I think this is a little bit
only
more
in motion. And
no pun intended. Yeah. I think this is a little bit more pronounced than in.
Yeah, but he's
Eastern
just walking.
Promises.
I think
he goes to the bathroom in the movie.
Yeah, and he goes to the bathroom.
And
actually,
they show him pissing, you know, and I think that's.
I was like, wow, he really will do anything on screen. Like, can you imagine? I mean, I don't mean to be so giggly on this side, but it's like, you know, he was. I drank a lot of water and, you know, okay, I can feel that.
Yeah. Well, I got the impression that it was probably just, you know, Michael Fassbender and Steve McQueen in this apartment, you know, just shooting this one scene.
Just shooting it. Yeah. I thought it was so ordinary. I mean, I think that's something that really bothers me about the way nudity is presented, especially in American cinema and an American point of view. It's like he's just walking around. Like, that's not that big a deal. Like, if you have a husband, boyfriend, brother, they've done that. And it's kind of interesting how male nudity is just so much more taboo that way. That's like the minute you see a penis, like, oh, slap that R or NC-17 on it. It's like, he's just walking around. Like, he wasn't erect. He wasn't, you know,
it was just walking. It was just there. But Steve McQueen is British. You know, he definitely has a European sensibility to making movies. And actually, I think Steve McQueen has a lot of potential to actually cross over to mainstream movies.
I do, too. I don't think his stuff is so European or so art house that it's not accessible. I mean, I think Hunger, you have to be a certain kind of viewer. I mean, you have to be a thoughtful viewer, a patient viewer for that movie, and same with Shame. But I don't think they're inaccessible or that the themes are at all inaccessible to American or mainstream movies at all. I would really like to see him do something, bigger, just because I would like to see how he tackles it. Just curiosity, but like if he continues making little small stories, I'm cool with that too.
My worry was that if he made that transition from indie to Hollywood movies, that unfortunately I was worried that he might turn into something like a David Gordon Green or something.
Yeah,
a filmmaker that had a lot of artistic and credibility behind him. And now he's just doing, you know, stoner comedies that aren't very funny or very good at all. And
yeah, it's strange. I don't know that. I mean, McQueen seems so serious that it would be hard to know. Like, when he makes some kind of James Franco stoner comedy, it's gonna, you know, Michael Fassbender stoner comedy.
Yeah,
it would be Fassbender, but it's and I think as you know, Fassbender becomes more. I mean, this is like his year. I mean, he's really becoming an A-list celebrity. And it'd be kind of interesting if, they could bring that partnership to something bigger. Yeah, some kind of, you know.
Well, he was in four movies this year alone. And this is, in my opinion, this is his best performance.
Oh, yeah.
By
far.
In the three other movies, he was, in the two other movies.
Oh, I haven't seen Dangerous Method yet, so
In X-Men First Class, where he's playing Magneto, and in Jane Eyre, he was a secondary character, I would say, not really on the forefront, maybe more so in X-Men than in
He really walked away with X-Men, and I'm not sure he was supposed to. Like, I think you were supposed to be more into Professor X in that movie, but you know,
well, that's just the charm and charisma.
Yeah, it's
and
just the charm
and magnetism.
I know everyone was like Team Magneto, like, and I was like, well, X-Men fumbled that one.
But Michael Fassbender in Shame is just so, I don't know. You're sympathetic to him, but you're still charmed by him. And mm-hmm. but by the end of the film, you really feel sorry for this individual.
You do. Like, it, you know, it seems so off-putting, the subject matter, you know, oh, he's a sex addict. And so you immediately have just a very, ugh, you know, that you're not, and you really like him. I mean, you want him to be fixed. I mean, and I was kind of laughing when I was watching it because I have met and dated, you know, his obnoxious boss like so many times. Like that guy is like the standard guy you meet in a bar. And I that is something that I thought the film was kind of either trying to parallel or saying something about, because like his boss really wasn't any healthier than he was in a lot of ways. Like this guy was married with a family, and he's still picking up any woman or trying to pick up any woman he can. And I kind of wondered if there wasn't something, just because the film wasn't saying something about, well, just because Fassbender's addiction was way more pronounced and perhaps more twisted in a way that, you know, not many of us will stumble into bar. And
I think Brandon's addiction was far more severe because
he didn't care what it was or how,
and it was at the cost of his personal relationships with everyone around him. With his boss, he's still concerned that he's married and he has kids and doesn't want to get found out, and he still has feelings towards other people and has consideration. So the addiction is never bigger than him. But with Brandon's character,
the
addiction is definitely bigger than this man. I mean, there's a scene where he's kind of convinced I'm through with this and wants to. Like I guess it's the throwing away the drugs in the toilet scene.
Yeah.
In this movie where he has
this,
like,
funny he cleaned out the fridge. Was that so he wouldn't go back and get the porn magazines? I was confused why he threw the spaghetti on top.
But he's like throwing all of his porn
his
away.
Computer.
And his computer, like all of this pornography, and it's a lot of porn that he has hidden all throughout this apartment. That was such a powerful scene, just seeing how much porn this man actually had in his apartment.
Yeah. It was sad because you, on one hand, you knew like he didn't decorate his apartment because, you know, he liked everything to sort of clean and neat, and he didn't get into any emotional stuff, even with like art or decoration. I mean, and yet on the other hand, it's like, I bet he spends all that money on porn, all the money that might go to like an IKEA sofa, he spends on porn, like, or hookers, because, you know, he was obviously paying a lot of women too, as if he needed to. I mean, you see that scene in the bar with the pretty blonde, and it's like, wow, this guy does not need to pay for it ever.
Or even at the beginning in the subway, you know, just making eyes at a woman.
Well, Tina, I thought that was kind of an interesting thing. You know, there was a definite darker thing about relationships, or at least something, or he had experiences that confirmed his worst thoughts about relationships, because you have the stuff with the boss, and then you have the woman on the train, and the big honking diamond. And the first time he meets her, he doesn't care. Like, he gets in behind her and he's trying to chase her down.
Yeah.
And the second time, you know, he gives her that very, you know, he kind of open to interpretation look, and he just seems so sad and broken. And it's, there's sort of a, I kind of wondered a feeling of everyone, you know, not everyone's like me, but that it, you know, it just doesn't matter. Like, there's nothing, there's no one I could ever be with that it's ever going to work. I mean, he just seems to have this, like, everything confirmed about relationships and attachments through everybody he meets in the movie.
Yeah.
But I'm, you know, I wasn't sure if he was, like, you know, sadly looking at her like, well, here comes my addiction again, or if it was what that exactly meant. I think it could mean a lot of things. So,
let's wrap up this episode of Movie Note. What is your final thought on shame, and what could people take away from it? This movie is opening very limited in I think only New York and LA, but it's getting a bigger release, and I personally recommend anyone see this movie. I guess if you are over 17, this movie.
You have to be a grown up.
But what is your final thought on this film, and what
do
people take away?
Yeah, it's definitely worth seeing. I mean, everybody's attitudes towards sex are probably going to be questioned. I mean, whatever baggage you're going to carry into it is, you know, if you are a little reserved or prudish, I mean, you should see it anyway and get your world shook up a little bit. But yeah, because it really is not that explicit. I mean, it's not, don't believe some of the you know, oh my, it's not that.
Yeah, there's no,
not that bad.
They're not, there's no penetration.
Yeah. In this movie. I mean, I think the beginning of Antichrist is probably more explicit than much of what you see in here.
They're definitely more stylized than
in here. But I think it's, you know, it really is. It's, I mean, it's the most human portrait you could get of a sex addict. I mean, that's something we throw, it's a word or a label we throw around a lot. And it's a, you know, there's people that have argued whether or not it exists. I don't, you know, who knows if it does or doesn't. I'm not a doctor, but I think that this film kind of sheds a light on somebody who might have that problem. And yeah, it's just human and complex and very sad. It's not the movie I think you'll think it is when you hear Michael Fassbender plays a sex addict. I mean, it's much more than that. It's about somebody, two people that are very, very broken and how they're dealing with that. And, you know, if you leave it, you know, honestly wanting them to get better, but knowing they probably won't.
Yeah, I think it's all there in the title, though. Shame. Just that word shame in relation to what this movie actually is, it says a lot. And if you have that word in your mind as you're watching it, you'll definitely feel what I feel is what Steve McQueen is trying to get at with examining these characters in this movie. I find it interesting that compared to Hunger, Steve McQueen's first film, shame is not as stylized. There's a shame. I mean, Hunger was definitely more stylized with slow motion and, I guess like just kind of the way it was photographed. I mean, especially in that last third of Hunger, I was kind of really surprised that we really don't have that much camera gymnastics, I guess, with shame.
No, and you know, the ones he did are almost kind of humorous, like the throwing away the porn scene that he's like, you know, they do that sort of Marvel flip book thing through it. And it was kind of funny. I mean, it was just, some of it was done with sort of a tongue in cheek, I thought, because you don't need to see the inside of the magazines, but they sort of did like a, you know, ding towards it. And it, there's some moments that it's actually kind of light in a really weird way. It's hard to say that, but yeah.
Well, where can we find you online, Elizabeth Rapp?
Film.com mostly this week. So,
all right. Yeah. And I highly recommend our listeners check out Elizabeth Rapp's work on film.com. You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/Rudy_Obias. That's RUDIE_OBIAS. Shakya.com, AutorCast.com, and everything that is Rudy at RudyObias.com. On the next episode of the AutorCast, we're going to be discussing We Need to Talk About Kevin, and we're going to be discussing Young Adults and perhaps Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy and perhaps The Sitter. It's the end of the year, so there's a lot of movies coming out, and we'll definitely be covering a lot of these movies on Shakya.com. So just keep coming back to the site and keep subscribing to this podcast. Closing out this episode of Movie Night, thank you so much for listening to our show. Goodbye.